Welcome back to the film experience. I have two special guests here today, Jose Solis
Oh, hey.
and Murtada Elfada.
Hello, guys.
And you know them from the site, from various articles. And we all do festival things, which is what we're here to talk about today, is the New York Film Festival. So now it's been over for 2 weeks, a week.
Yes, yeah, about 2 weeks, yeah.
But as I was saying to the guys offline a moment ago, it's really hard in the fall, if you do this for a life, to know what's in theaters versus what you're seeing at festivals because everybody's on such different timelines. And I was thinking nothing's in theaters, but you disagree. Is that correct, Murtada?
Yes, there's a lot. One of my favorite movies of the year, which was at New York Film Festival, so we can talk about it, just Felicity just opened this Friday. I also yesterday saw The Square, which I missed at the festival, which also opened this week. So The Florida Project is in theaters. Lady Bird's coming on Monday, on Friday, I mean. So there's a lot from the festivals and other movies too.
I
The
don't.
Mountain Between Us. You have to see that to discover that Idris Elba has no pores. Lots of close-ups.
Yes. I heard an amusing story about Mountain Between Us from the director, who, those of you who follow the foreign film race will know, because he's had two nominees already, Omar and Paradise Now. Hani Abu Assad, I think, is the last name. And it, so in the movie, The Mountain Between Us, there's this dog who's on the plane with them. So the only survivors of the plane crash are Kate and Idris and the dog. And I asked him in our little interview if it was easier to get the dog to constantly growl at Idris, because one of the running jokes is that the dog does not like Idris. And he said, no, that was actually hard because Idris was the dog's favorite person on set. So they always had to replace Idris on the set whenever the dog had close-ups where he had to growl, because he wouldn't growl at Idris.
Well, who would growl at the address?
I mean, I would under certain circumstances, I guess.
Yes, certain circumstances. So, okay, so the New York Film Festival, Mountain Between Us was not part of that. So I would just want to go sort of in order. So the opening night film was Last Flag Flying. Did both of you guys take that in?
I did, yeah.
I didn't, so you guys can tell me about it. Or
Um,
not.
or not. I think it's a weak effort from Richard Linklater. But it definitely has his style of sort of chill, like hang out with the guys, type of non-narrative, even though it has a story. But I guess it wasn't for me. I'm trying to be open-minded about it because I sense that it will be a big Oscar hit. How about you, Jose?
I don't even know. Like I don't remember half the movie by now. I remember liking Steve Carell. I thought Bryan Cranston was just doing too much. He was just a little bit too much for me, and it just felt like a really old movie. I don't even mean like a classic, but like a dated movie. Like they don't make movies like this anymore for a reason.
So are you talking about like old, like, 7 years ago type of thing?
No, I'm talking about like, I don't know, like 70s movies that I would never want to go back to. Like, I don't know, things that were probably, groundbreaking in the 70s, but now we're like, huh?
So I would agree on Bryan Cranston, and I would say doing too much is kind of his MO as an actor, I would say.
So why do other actors love him that much? Or is that like too big a question for this hour?
I mean, what's that old like cliche phrase about like sometimes people give performances bad enough that you have to give them an Oscar? So I think I forget who said it, it was some famous critic, but I think the idea of people who do a lot of acting every time, people are naturally drawn to that if, you know, I
Or
don't know.
maybe they admire that he goes for broke every time. No fear.
That's true, because it does require trust and no fear and it basically requires to go for broke if you want to give like a masterful performance. But I wouldn't feel like his performance is. It's also too much. I agree with Jose.
Yeah, but I just keep being like amazed by Steve Carell. I wouldn't have believed when I saw the 40-Year-Old Virgin that this man would become such a great actor. Because like I had just seen Battle of the Sexes like a few days before seeing Last Flag Flying, and he was just so different and so, I don't know, so he was so warm and flag and so horrible in a good way in Battle.
Yeah, he seems to have two modes. He has the one mode that's closer to Cranston, which is sort of like the big, showy and usually comic, like Battle of the Sexes. And he's but it turns out what he's so good at is interiority and these like very quiet performances, which Last Flag Flying is more one of. I would argue his Oscar-nominated performance is some weird hybrid of the two, but that's just me.
Oh, the Foxcatcher one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he was great. He was my favorite in that. I know I'm in the minority among, gay Twitter who all love, what's his name? Channing Tatum. But I loved Carell. I thought he gave, second best. Mark Ruffalo is first.
See, to me, that's why I would call it a hybrid, because I felt like he was trying to do interior that he's so good at, but it was, to me, it was like exterior within the interior. I don't know. Something about it didn't work for me at all. But that's just me. Okay, so that was the opening night. The centerpiece was Wonderstruck, which we have not, for a Todd Haynes movie, strangely, we haven't covered that much of the film experience. I'm feeling a little bit weird about it. And part of the problem is I had trouble getting into it, and it wasn't until sort of the end where it all coalesced for me, and movies that wait that long to come together. At least for me, it's hard for me to feel passionate about them. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, it had too many children for me. Basically.
I thought it was, I was kind of bored throughout it. I don't know. Of course it looks great and everything is meticulous. It's a Todd Haynes movie after all. The costumes, the production design, everything, the camera, the colors from black and white, everything looked amazing, but it was kind of boring. And the script really had no point of view. It was kind of built as a puzzle. And then suddenly they give up the whole puzzle, and the last 15 minutes is just them telling us everything instead of sort of all the clues they've been throwing about for the last 2 hours coming to fruition. I think it's a very weak script, and that's why I didn't really respond to it.
I mean, I do think it's when the puzzle pieces coming together, I do think it manages to be quite moving at the end. Especially if you naturally respond to sort of museums and the sort of Jones to collect or curate, which I think a lot of people who are obsessive about fandom of any kind do that. So I think in that way it's very relatable. But it is, there's something about it that's exactly what people usually criticize about Todd Haynes that I don't agree with, is that it's like happening under glass, like there's some sort of remove.
And what did you guys think of the performances? Because I think one of the reasons that I didn't respond to it is, Jose already said too many children, that I didn't really like the young people's performances at all three of them. And I know we should not speak ill of children, but I think that's one of the reasons why I couldn't get into the movie is that neither the young two boys in the one story or the girl in the other story moved me at all.
Wait, weren't they 30-year-old actors playing children? No, I'm kidding. Like, they were cute. I mean, like, I had the same problem with it, I guess. Now I sound like a horrible person, but I thought Wonderstruck was like Stranger Things meets Hugo, which are two things that I had to kind of force myself to get into.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to have that issue with American child actors a lot, where I always feel like they're doing too much. Whereas, for whatever reason, European, Scandinavians, family films from those countries tend to be, I don't know, more sophisticated, like the children are just existing on camera.
Well, there was a child in another American movie at NIFF, the girl from the Florida Project. She was good.
Yes, but see, that's what I'm talking about. That's a more, it strikes me as a more European way of having child actors where it doesn't really feel like they're acting. And Jose?
Nathaniel, I've been dying to ask you about this because I my heart broke for you watching Wonderstruck because Julianne Moore doesn't get a single line. And I was like, I miss her voice so much. And I was like, Nathaniel probably died watching this.
Well, she does. Oh, right. She doesn't get a single line.
No,
Because
she
I
just
just.
gets like, muffled, like help or something like that. But then there's nothing. And I just wanted her to like do one of her like Magnolia monologues at some point.
That would have been highly inappropriate for this particular picture. Although her silent film actress seemed worldly enough to be able to pull that off if you could hear her.
Yeah,
Who
I
do you think?
wanted more of the silent film
Oh,
actress
totally. Who do you think
bit.
inspired her? Because like there were like elements of like that movie, The Wind, with Lillian Gish at some point, but I was like, she was just playing everyone.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking completely was Lillian Gish, which I think we were supposed to be thinking based on the footage.
And
Yeah.
also like I love that her old age makeup made me think of Laura Brown, and I think of Laura Brown's always a good thing, right, Murtada?
Absolutely. Laura Brown is my favorite Julianne. So, yeah. Although there was also another parallel to The Hours in that she had a nose as the older woman, right? It was a different nose. So she was giving us a little bit of Nicole as Virginia Woolf.
She had a nose.
Yes.
I don't remember that. Like, there's something that I really appreciated, though, about Wonderstruck, and at the risk of sounding ridiculously earnest for this, for 9 in the morning. It made me, like I'm always like a sap for New York, and I think it's like
Wait,
the
what was that?
I'm always a sap for New York City, and I feel that more than any other of Todd Haynes movies, like this one was so in love with the place where it was set. Because I know we had fake New York and Carol, but in this one, like I live in Queens and I have never been to that museum, and I haven't been since watching the movie, but now I want to go.
Well, it certainly loves New York a lot. Like my favorite shot in the movie is in the 1977 when the little boy comes out of Port Authority into the streets of New York, and like they pan out, and it's like then they give us the whole street, a kaleidoscope of people and people different colors and ethnicities, but also vibrant, colorful costumes. I call it the Sandy Powell shot. That was my favorite little shot in the whole movie.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times in movies I get annoyed when the score suddenly to give you an example, like Victoria and Abdul, like the score has all these like sort of Indian music cues even though it's like a traditional score. And so when in Wonderstruck when we go to the New York of the 70s and suddenly the music gets all funky, like funkified, like for a second I was like, oh, here we go. But there was something that was so earnest about it, to use Jose's word, that it really worked for me.
Roller girl should have been at some in a scene at some point,
So Wonderstruck, we're all kind of mixed on. I'm eager to see that again, where I can look at it piecemeal, like on DVD or what have you. Because I think it's going to be one of these movies that has like things that I didn't catch the first time, but because I wasn't super engaged, it was hard to be like obsessive about it. So I'm looking forward to like sort of digging into it because it is a Todd Haynes movie after all, and they're always worth seeing more than once.
That's true.
And the closing film was Wonder Wheel, which I don't think I've talked to either of you about.
Even though we all sat next to each other.
Even though we all sat next to each other, yes. So, and I feel like I'm the only person in the world that liked it.
No, but We talked about it at lunch after we
Oh,
saw it.
that's. Oh, okay. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
And we were all doing our Kate impressions.
I have to say, like, it has diminished a lot since I saw it. But, I'd love to hear what you guys think because Nathaniel, you liked it, and Jose, you're positive on it as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, except for Justin Timberlake, who I will pretend was not in the movie, I thought everything about it was just great.
Although the pretending Justin is not in the movie is difficult because he does open the movie.
And he talks through it.
Yeah. So he's the narrator, since most of you haven't seen it yet, and he does like this sort of like literary opening, Woody likes stuff like that, like from Manhattan, the sort of chapter one. So it's a little bit like he's pulling you into the story, like he t even tells you he's a playwright and meet this melodramatic character, which is not Kate Winslet, by the way, but her stepdaughter. So yeah, it's a. I also thought he was the problem in the movie, but overall, like thinking about the screenplay and the structure and the other performances, I think if Justin Timberlake had been a different actor, it would have all really worked for me personally.
Oh yeah, and Woody himself should have played him. Because the one thing that okay, maybe not. I don't want to see him shirtless, but like the one thing that I thought about Justin Timberlake, and I'm always like even in elements that I don't like in Woody's movies, I'm always trying to I always find them so fascinating for a reason, and I wonder like I think can you guys would you guys agree that Justin Timberlake is the most, like traditionally handsome. I mean, he has a six pack, handsome, like Woody surrogate ever, because he usually finds like nerdy looking, like more average looking guys. So I was really fascinated by the fact that he chose such a hot guy to be his, the Woody role.
That's a good point that I hadn't even thought of, because there is actually a reason to cast that way, based on the all the women in the movie sort of falling for him.
Also, he's, Woody usually is about middle-aged men falling in love with teenage girls, and this one is sort of flipped because Kate plays someone who's older than Justin in the film, and that's part of why he likes her.
Yes. And then he has, and then he's closer to the age of her stepdaughter. So that the like this sort of romantic quagmire, which it's always in Woody Allen movies. But I just love the theatricality of it, which I think is probably, I'm sensing that's why one of the reasons people were turned off by it. But I actually think that was its strongest element. That it's just so, it feels so much like a play, which is why I think had the central performance been, or not central, but the narrator performance been stronger, that would have made, that would have sold the sort of, I'm telling you, a melodrama opening, and then it would have prepared you for how just purely theatrical it is. Like the colors are too bright, the sets are very much like sets.
I like the meta commenting, like, in the middle of Kate Winslet having her big breakdown, she looks to Jim Belushi and says, "Spare me the bad drama," which I thought was funny in that because that scene could be construed as sort of a bad scene from a bad drama. And then she's
Yes.
kind of commenting on it by saying that. So there was a lot of that sprinkled throughout the movie that I enjoyed.
I also think we should all start like a drinking game, and like every time like a female character in a movie says, "I'm unraveling," we should have like two shots.
Speaking of the hours again, I seem to be unraveling.
I and again, like I don't think because but I was reading reviews of the movie afterwards, and I don't think that Woody, because it's not in to like Woody Allen, so people just pick on him for so many different reasons, and I feel like one of the things people are the most unfair about when it comes to his work is that he's obviously all about the references and he can't hide them, but people don't give him props for subverting them and for making them his own. Because I saw many critics comparing Wonder Wheel to Streetcar, and they're right. And they were like, "Oh, he did Streetcar better in Blue Jasmine." But I like how in this one, like he gives, like we think that the Blanche character coming into the life of these people and disrupting them will be the center. But he actually gives Stella, which I think is Kate Winslet's character, the leading role this time around. And it made me think how Streetcar would have been if we'd seen it from Stella's point of view.
That's a great point. I wasn't really thinking of Streetcar that much, but I can totally see that now that you're saying it. And again, it plays into the theatricality and also makes this quite a counterpoint to Blue Jasmine, which it's going to be compared to anyways because the sort of tragic comic lead actress performance. I don't think Kate is as good as Kate, but I think she's like amazing in it. It's not quite Blue Jasmine, but I think she's great in it.
So, the big question, the Oscar question, because this is one of like Woody's not very like if you look at the reviews, they're mostly negative. It's very low on the Metacritic. So is Kate gonna make it to the Oscar five? What do you think, Nathaniel?
I'm currently predicting her, but everybody says I'm crazy, so who knows? But also, I would like to remind everyone that initial festival bows are never the full story of how a movie is received.
Yeah, exactly. All these movies have yet to open, and they will change when they open. I agree with you.
Because you only get a tiny portion of critics at any festival bow. And also, then you are also discounting the audience reaction. I mean, I'm sorry to bring this up because it's a terrible movie, but To Rome with Love, a few years ago, that played forever in New York, and it actually did really good business for a Woody Allen movie. I had no idea why audiences liked it, but they went to it a
Penelope
lot.
Cruz. Well,
Right,
all
but
Woody
like,
Allen
but
movies.
no, no, but not all. I mean, it was way more successful than a lot of his other ones, and I just think you can't discount like the wider, more general like film critic and media and audience reaction to things, would need neither of which you know at festival bows.
Absolutely.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But it's
A good one.
also, but also the best actress category. It's like who knows? Like beyond Frances and Sally, who knows?
So I have to say, I've seen 16, 17 movies at a New York Film Festival, and like these three, which were the three, the opening, the center piece, and the closing, were the some of the most disappointing, which it's just there were so many other fantastic movies playing at the festival. So I don't know, obviously two of them have never played any other festival, so that's why they were chosen. But maybe New York should look into these spots and populating them with better movies in general.
Well, so speaking of better movies in general, can you each name your favorite two films from this particular festival?
Oh yeah, Beats Per Minute and The Square were my favorite. I love them both so much.
Since you mentioned Beats Per Minute and that was my favorite too, the other two I'll mention are Felicity, and The Rider. Those two are also amazing.
And so, for those of you who are like, what are these movies? Felicity is Senegal's Oscar submission this year. BPM, of course, is France's submission. And The Square is Sweden's. Wait, Sweden? Yes. Okay.
And The Rider is an American movie that I think it's going to come out next year.
Okay. I haven't seen The Rider, but is it a documentary or is it a hybrid between a
It's a
doc?
hybrid, so it's based on a true story. So the director sort of went to this community in South Dakota and met with the people in it and got inspired by this one sort of horse rider, rodeo rider, and told his story. And he played himself, but it was fictionalized. So he played himself. She wrote a screenplay, and then he played himself. And I loved what she said at the sort of the post-screening Q&A when they asked her why did she do this hybrid, and she said because there is emotional truth in fiction. And it's a great movie, and it's unlike anything else that I've seen at the festival.
Did either of you see that director's first movie, Songs My Brothers Taught Me?
No. And we should say her name. Her name is Chloe Zhao.
Yes, she directed this movie like 2 years ago, I think, and it takes place entirely in a Native American and an Indian reservation, and I don't think that was a hybrid or whatever, but she has this eye for just, and I know this sounds like a cliche, but just like capturing like naturalistic performances. And I remember admiring that movie a lot because she did work with non-professional actors, but they were so compelling. Like they made me think of a documentary, if documentaries were like more fun.
Well, I think on that point, we should mention that female directors have been really killing it this year, which is so happy about. Because one of the other best movies from the festival was Western by Valeska Grisebach, but I just thought it was amazing, and it's similar in that I haven't seen The Rider, but it's similar in that she uses a lot of things that you might construe as more documentary, like non-actors and just sort of basically playing people like themselves. She just finds locals, depending on where she's telling the story. But it's a really amazing movie about German workers doing a job, a construction job in Bulgaria, and sort of their conflicts and friendships with the local Bulgarians. I thought it was amazing. And then Agnieszka Holland was also at the festival with Poland's Oscar submissions called Spore, which I also feel like I'm the only person who likes, but I was really into it. And Dee Reese, of course, with Mudbound, which Murtada and I have both written about on the site, so you could check out those reviews. And Greta Gerwig, we haven't even talked about Lady Bird.
Oh yeah, I love Lady Bird too.
And then it's Agnes Varda. I mean, there's a whole bunch of great stuff that's been happening with female directors beyond, like, of course, Patty Jenkins earlier in the summer with Wonder Woman got so much attention. So I just think, in addition
And
to.
Claire Denis was at the New York Film Festival with
Right.
a romantic comedy.
Yeah, so I just think, in addition to. Like, even though this year has been gross, for lack of a better word, with, given. The US government, as well as all the Harvey Weinstein stories. But I think these things may help me feel optimistic about the future. How about you guys?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Women should run the world.
Yeah, I mean,
Yes.
they're really like, they're making it, let's just put it this way, they're making it really hard for people to say dumb arguments like, well, women aren't as good as directors, that sort of thing. Because if the movies are really good, you have to stop pretending that that's true.
Yeah. And I want to just, like Lady Bird was definitely top five for me at the festival. And I just want to mention one thing about it. Like all the performances in it were great, but a performance that I really responded to, and I don't see it mentioned anywhere, is Beanie Feldstein as the best friend of Saoirse Ronan's character. She had such a warm presence in the movie, and also she had an almost she had a subplot of her own that was only sort of played in gestures. She had a big crush on a teacher of them, and they had a few scenes together, but they never sort of talked, or they talked in generalities. And I just thought it was a cute story, a cute subplot that she played very, very well. And somebody should mention her for that performance, I
Well,
hope.
I think Greta will be very happy that you did, because I just got back from the Middleburg Film Festival, and during the Q&A for Lady Bird, Greta was like, they asked her about the casting, and almost everybody in the movie is somebody she was like already a fan of, like Laurie Metcalf from theater and Tracy Letts from her theater, because Greta loves stage plays. And but Beanie Feldstein was totally new. She was like the cast member that was totally new. Like, she had no idea about her work. And she said, so as soon as she was brought up, she just goes, Beanie Feldstein! Like, so excited. And she was like, when she came in, she did her audition, and her audition was basically what you see on screen. Like, the performance was completely there. And I was like sold by, the second she started, basically. So
Yeah, she's
she loves
amazing.
her.
She's on
Gonna
she is
grow
on
dolls.
Broadway right now in Hello, Dolly.
She's amazing on that.
Who does she play in Hello, Dolly?
Fannie Mae. Mini Fay. Well, wait, my brain's not working right now. Mini Fay.
She's really good in it, yes. And she's Jonah Hill's sister, but I think she's gonna have a great, great future.
Wait, she's Jonah Hill's sister?
Yes.
Like in real life?
In real life, yeah.
Oh my God. The things you learn podcasting early in the morning.
And she's like BFFs with Evan Hansen. I don't remember that guy's name.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
Oh God, what is his name?
I keep thinking Oliver Platt, but I know
Something
that.
Platt. It's definitely Platt.
Oh, Ben Platt.
Ben
Ben
Platt.
Platt.
They're like, that's.
So I know I had a follow-up question here. You guys both mentioned BPM, which was also my favorite of the festival and my favorite of the Toronto Festival.
Oh, yay.
I just think it's a masterpiece, basically. And that is also, speaking of movies that are in actual release, that is in theaters, and I feel like people don't know that. But it's actually out. So please go see it, because it is freaking amazing. And you know my feelings and aversion to long movies. It's 2.5 hours, and I felt like 70 minutes to me. I was so into it.
Yes. And I don't think there will be a better performance by any actor this year than the guy who plays the lead in BPM. Sean, I think his name is Nahul Perez Biscayart. He is amazing in the film, and it is definitely, I think, one of the best performances of the year, if not the best.
And he's actually not from France, right? He's Argentinian or something?
He's Argentinian,
Yeah.
yes.
But speaks perfect French, you know.
Yeah. And one of the things that I love going to the public screenings at the New York Film Festival is sort of the atmosphere. And in that screening, it was introduced by Amy Tobin, who before she did, she introduced the director, gave a tribute to James Lyons. If you remember, he was Todd Haynes' editor. And because it was the 10th anniversary of his death from AIDS, and she said his friends are in the audience. And then Robin Campillo came on. I mean, I'm getting choked up right now just thinking about it. And before he sort of introduced his actors and introduced his film, he talked about how ACT UP started in New York, and that he wants to acknowledge that. And then a lot of people from ACT UP were in the audience from ACT UP New York. So it was an amazing screening. Just from that, like I got choked up before the movie even started. So that's sort of the thing I love about New York Film Festival is those moments.
The thing that I want to get across to everyone about BPM, though, because I think the subject matter itself, people are like, oh, another AIDS drama. Like, I've heard people say that, and I'm like, it's so much different than other AIDS drama you've seen, and it's not, it has such a wide range of, like, tones that it's not, like, this completely, like, downer. There's just so much life in it. So it reminded me of that, you know, famous quote from Angels in America, the more life, because it's just so alive. Like it like has more of like humor, sexuality, like everything. It's a great movie, so please go see it.
Yeah, and it's also like scarily relevant right now because, I mean, it's not like we've, like it's not like AIDS and HIV have disappeared. In fact, like
Exactly.
just like PSA out there, just like 1 in 8 people in New York City are HIV positive, and most of them don't even know. So it's scary how relevant BPM is.
People like to pretend those things are gone, but they are not gone.
And it's also a very, very sexy movie.
And it's
So,
funny.
yes, everyone in it is very sexy and they have lots of sex. So if you're into that, go see it.
I will say that this movie has one of the best sort of uses of flashback that I've ever seen in a movie.
Yes.
And that ties into the sex scene. That's all I'll say about
That
it.
seems so great.
What was the your least favorite thing you saw at New York Film Festival?
Arthur Miller Ryder, I think that was my least favorite.
Oh, I love Arthur Miller. I didn't see the movie though.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of Arthur Miller, you maybe you'd like it, but and I'm not a fan. So, but I think it was cobbled by the fact that it was done by his daughter. So it was directed by his daughter, Rebecca Miller, Mrs. Daniel Day-Lewis. It's a very sort of loving love letter from a daughter to a father she admires. But like, it doesn't really give you anything more. Like, it doesn't explore his work as much. You know, she spends a lot of time in his famous plays, and then she spends like very little time on the plays that he did in the 60s and 70s, which were not as successful. And the only thing we get out of that is that, oh, the critics were not kind to him. And I'm like, okay, can you tell me more about these plays? Why weren't they successful? What he even thought of them? That's not there. And even sort of the family dynamics in it. There is sort of a revelation that I don't want to give away for people who haven't seen the movie. That is a huge thing in their family. And basically, she says, "I didn't know how to talk about this." And even though my dad offered to be interviewed about it on camera, and I kept postponing it, and then he died. And that's basically this all she says about this huge revelation in their family. So it was very disappointing from that perspective.
How about you,
And
Jose?
I don't think I had a least favorite, but I will say that my overall feeling of the festival was that usually I was either lukewarm or completely indifferent towards the work of directors I love, like Joachim Trier and Aki Kaurismäki and Desplechin, who, I love everything he does. And I was just like indifferent towards Ismael's Ghosts and also towards the Florida Project. It did nothing for me. I thought it was, I admired it. And I guess that was it. Like, I admired more movies than I loved. So, yeah, I can't even pick up a one that I just flat out disliked.
So you and I know you love the question about what did you hate? I know you love that question.
Favorite question.
So I'm sad to hear you didn't like Thelma, Joachim Trier's
It's not,
movie.
no, it's not that, I, it's not even that. It's not that I like actively dislike it. It's just that usually all of his other movies, even, Louder Than Bombs, which came out last year, and I don't feel people were talking about too much, all of his movies haunt me for weeks. But Thelma, I was like, oh, that was a good movie, but then I forgot about it.
I will say, for this is highly specific niche market, perhaps, but I will say for someone who grew up in a very sort of homophobic, stifling religious culture as I did, Thelma is really fascinating to watch because it is about a lesbian college student who was raised like sort of ultra Christian and her. But it has supernatural elements too. The oppressiveness of your whole structure and your whole world and everything you've learned saying what you feel is wrong. I found really haunting about Thelma.
It's like Carrie minus the camp.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it. But it is going to be like it'll probably be a little polarizing though, because it's a strange without being campy or really becoming genre in a way.
Right. And it's Norway's Oscar submission, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Which is awesome because, I love that Norway's always sending like disaster movies and like weird genre movies. So go Norway.
Well, they
And I
have
think it opens soon, right? I think it opens this week or next week.
November something. Yeah, it's in November. So if you like Joaquin Trier movies, you should see it to be a completist. He of course made Reprise, which is still my favorite of his movies, and Oslo, August 31st, which I think was his biggest hit so far. Any other we need to wrap up? But any other comments about the festival? We didn't touch on some movies.
I would just say go see Faces Places because it's so you were talking about things that give you hope, and that movie was like joy for like 2 hours. Everything about that movie was so heartwarming and also like not in a corny way, but it was just so I don't know like I that I didn't know when I saw the movie that that guy JR was the same guy who did that giant piece at the wall in the border. And
Wait, what? Oh no. Your voice.
into what?
Wait, Jose, can you repeat that? Your voice cut out. We didn't hear what you said about JR.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I didn't know that he was the same artist who did that giant picture of a little girl in the US-Mexico border, which went viral like a few weeks ago, I feel. And so I loved how the movie ties into what's going on in the world because it's making political art, but it's also so heartwarming. It's kind of like a romance in a way, and it just made me happy. Every time I think about that movie, I smile.
I love Agnes Varda for that reason. It's not that she
Yeah.
hasn't made depressing things before, but her there's speaking of like the BPM thing about more life, like her movies always feel very very much like they're alive, which is a lot of art that's successful feels that way, but art that you forget about the next day, like it's like just done, you know. And these things are living, sort of living documents. Murtada, any last takeaways for you?
Yeah, I mean, there was I enjoyed the festival in general. I think another film we haven't mentioned that is really good, is really fantastic, is First Reform, the new Paul Schrader, and I think that's coming out in April in the US. And that's sort of a character study of a priest in crisis played by Ethan Hawke, and it's a fantastic performance from Ethan Hawke, and also I don't know what to say about it, but it's beyond, it's a very good movie, and people should check it out.
Well, you reviewed it for the site, so they can go and read your review.
Yes.
All right, thanks for tuning in. I want to thank my guests, Jose Solis and Murtada El Fadl.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye. That was fun. We
Yes.
talked about a lot of things that I feel like the site needed to talk about. Like, it's so weird that we haven't said anything about Wonderstruck or Wonder Wheel yet.
And we made it without calling Juno Temple a baby hooker, so
I know, right?
I'm gonna add that in as a blooper.
Uh-oh. She has graduated into a gangster's mall now from baby hooker.
Hey, I love her. I mean, I want her to play all the baby hookers, so go her.
It's a natural progression. So
It
I think when she's like 50, she'll be playing madams of brothels or something.
Oh, that like Mae West, that's gonna be amazing. Cannot wait.